The share today is Le'ilei Nishmas Miriam Shendel, Bas Ephraim Shimon, Verivka, and we hope that all of the learning that we do and that we do throughout this class and afterwards should be Le'ilei Nishmata. I want to continue, obviously we're still in Hanukkah, and I want to continue a little bit. Hanukkah is of course a rabbinic holiday. It is after the period of prophecy. Even Purim, which is in Tanakh, is technically a rabbinic holiday. It is not a Torah holiday. But certainly Hanukkah is after Tanakh. It is in the middle of the Bayis Sheni. There is no Nevuah. It has the status of a rabbinic Yom Tov. Not a Yom Tov, but a rabbinic Zman where you light candles and you have to say Hallel and Al Hanisim. But surprise, Harisha Baal Peh says very little about Hanukkah. If you look at the Mishnah, the Hanukkah story happened, as I think we mentioned last week, approximate date, 180 before the Common Era, 180 BCE. The Mishnah was written not only after the Chorban Bayis Sheni, but even after the Bar Kokhba revolt. The Mishnah was compiled around 200 of the Common Era. So the Mishnah was compiled around 380 years, almost 400 years after the Hanukkah story. So the Hanukkah story was very well known by the time the Mishnah was written. And yet, the Mishnah mentions almost nothing about Hanukkah. The only mention in the Mishnah about Hanukkah is a very obscure reference in Bava Kamma. It's talking about a camel, and on the back of the camel are very long flax, and the camel is walking through a shuk, and the flax enters a store and gets ignited by a lantern, and as the unbeknownst to anybody, the flax is burning, and as the camel keeps on walking, a building is set on fire and is destroyed, and there is a discussion who is responsible, the owner of the lantern or the owner of the camel, for the building that is burnt down. And the Mishnah initially makes a distinction between a lantern that's in a store where the flax entered the store, in which case the store owner was not responsible because he was not negligent, and then it would be the owner of the camel, versus a lantern that is outside of the store in the street, where the owner should not have left it in the street, and therefore the owner of the lantern is responsible. But Rabbi Yehuda then says, well, that's not always the case, however. If the outside light was a Ner Chanukah, the store owner was entitled to put it there. Therefore, the owner of the camel should have seen where the camel was going, and therefore the owner of the camel is liable. You know, if you didn't know that such a thing as Chanukah existed, this would be the only reference to the holiday of Chanukah in the entire six quarters of the Mishnah, a very oblique, indirect reference. And the commentaries talk about the fact, you know, we have a whole tractate about Purim, and yet there's nothing in the Mishnah about Hanukkah. We have in the Gemara, we have a few pages. So some want to suggest a few ideas. Number one, remember that the culmination of the rebellion of the Hashmonaim was the establishment of a kingdom which lasted for over 100 years, almost 200 years, the Hasmonean Kingdom. But the Ramban points out that although the original Hashmonaim were tzaddikim and kedoshim, it was forbidden for them to establish a monarchy, because Yaakov Avinu said, Lo Yosser Shevet Mi Yehuda, that Malchus only belongs to the tribe of Yehuda, that would be David HaMelech, and there was something wrong with Kohanim taking the political leadership of Am Yisrael. By the way, it's interesting, the Ramban actually gives two reasons. Why was it wrong for Kohanim to take Malchus? He gives two reasons, very important. Reason number one is, Malchus only belongs to Shevet Yehuda. And based on that, any tribe that would have taken Malchus would have been incorrect. But then the Ramban brings from the Yerushalmi that there's a special Avera in a Kohen being a Melech. A Kohen is not supposed to be a Melech. A Kohen is supposed to be the spiritual leadership of Am Yisrael, and he should not corrupt his spiritual leadership by being involved in politics. That is very, very fascinating, Yerushalmi. We know that in the United States, you know, we have this idea of separation of church and state, and people will typically say that's because we need to protect the state from the negative influence of religion. But the Yerushalmi is saying the opposite. There should be a separation between religion and state, not to protect the state from religion, but to protect the religion from the state. Because what happens is that when spiritual leaders have to be involved in day-to-day political decision-making, there is often the nisayon of money, of power, and as a result, one's judgment is not going to be pure because it is tainted by partisan considerations. This has great, great relevance to the concept of religious parties, of course, in the state of Israel. I don't want to be marach on that so much, other than to note that presumably this teaching of the Talmud Yerushalmi would not be in favor of religious parties being actively involved in politics. And Lahavdil many Havdalas, this was the position of the Pope as well. You know, the Pope ordered around more than 10 years ago, the Pope said that no Catholic clergy are allowed to be in elective office. There was a long-standing congressman in Washington, Robert Drynan, who had been there a very long time. He had considerable seniority, and Pope ordered him to resign his seat. He said, if you want to be a man of God, you cannot be actively in the political system, and he had to resign his seat on the basis of that order. Okay. But be it as it may, going back to my question, why Chanukah is not in the Mishnah, so some have suggested that since their whole malchus was a sinful malchus, and in particular, the author of the Mishnah was Rav Yehuda HaNasi, who was a descendant of David HaMelech. So he felt that the whole malchus Chashmonaim was a usurpation of malchus based David, and therefore it was not put in. Others say, and I mentioned this idea last week, that Chanukah was a dangerous festival. It was a politically incorrect festival. It was a festival that celebrated the overthrow of foreign domination in Eretz Yisrael. But when the Mishnah was written, remember what happened. The Beis HaMikdash was destroyed in the year 70. And then around the year 130 was the catastrophic Bar Kokhba revolt. This was the second time in around 50 or 60 years that the Jewish people staged a massive revolt against Rome, which was mercilessly crushed. And finally, by the year 200, things are settling down. Rav Yehuda HaNasi is able to gather the Chachamim and write the Mishnah. But what's going to happen if he writes about Chanukah in great detail? So the Romans are going to know, what's this thing about Chanukah? Oh, this is our celebration of overthrowing foreign domination of Eretz Yisrael. Not too good. The Romans would come in and think this is yet another revolt of the Jews. So that is why Chanukah was de-emphasized. But be it as it may, we do have, although the Mishnah itself talks about Chanukah in a very fragmentary, oblique, obscure way, the Gemara in Shabbos does devote, actually not so much space, but it devotes around three folio pages, that's six amudim, to the discussion of Chanukah. And it quotes a Braisa. So a Braisa is a teaching of the Tanaim that is not in the Mishnah, it's outside of the Mishnah. And it mentions the following idea, that there are three different ways you can fulfill the mitzvah of Chanukah. There is basic, there is enhanced, and then there is super enhanced. The basic mitzvah is each family only has to light one candle every night of Chanukah. And you're Yotzei. If I have 10 people in my family, night one, I just light one candle. And even night eight, I just light one candle. One candle every night is all you need. But then there is something called Mahadrin. If you want to do the mitzvah in a more beautiful way, and not just be Yotzei, then you should light one candle, still one candle, for every member of your family. So if I have 10 people and I want to do the beautiful way, night one, I light 10 candles. Night eight, I also light 10 candles based on the number of family. But then there's a third level that's called Mahadrin Min HaMahadrin. Right? Sounds like a kosher restaurant. Mahadrin Min HaMahadrin. And that, only on that level, that's the highest level, is there the famous Machlokes, Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, where Beis Shammai says start with eight and go down, and Beis Hillel says start with one and go up. And we, of course, paskin like Beis Hillel. I don't want to get into the technicalities of the halacha, but suffice it to say that the machlokes Ashkenazim and Sfardim is, if you do the highest level, do you include the middle level? Meaning Sfardim take the position that if you want to do the highest level and only light according to the days, only one menorah is lit. Because otherwise, if you have too many menorahs, we don't really know the days. I walk by and I see 100 candles, I don't really know. However, the minhag of Ashkenazim is that if you're doing the highest level, you also include the middle level so that every member of the household has a menorah. Now, even then, there are different exceptions. Husband and wife, there's a big, big machlokas. The most common custom is that husband and wife do not light separate menorahs, although some say they should. And there's another machlokas about girls, whether married or single. Well, if they're married, they'd be yotzi with their husband. But if they're single and they're living at home, if they're not living at home, they certainly would light the menorah where they're living. But if they're living at home, so some say that they should light separate menorahs. Some say not. But certainly the boys that are able to light, even if they're not bar mitzvah, the minhag of Ashkenazim is they light a separate menorah. The minhag of Sfardim is that only the Bala Bayis light. But be it as it may, we see that Chanukah has this highest level of Mahadrin Min HaMahadrin. And what's so interesting is, everybody does Mahadrin Min HaMahadrin. Have you ever heard of somebody saying, on the eighth day of Chanukah, I'm only going to light one candle? And I say, well, what do you mean? You have to light eight candles. No, I'm no tzaddik. I don't have to do Mahadrin Min HaMahadrin. I want to be Yotzeh. Has anyone ever said, I just want to be Yotzeh? Even people who don't keep Shabbos. Right? They're going to light eight candles. Right? So apparently, the notion of doing the mitzvah of Chanukah with beauty and enhancement is very, very deeply ingrained in the psyche of the Jewish people. And we know, of course, there is a general rule called Heder Mitzvah. And the general rule of Heder Mitzvah says, whenever you do a mitzvah, it should be done in a beautiful way. But it's very clear that Ner Chanukah is not simply a specific expression of the general concept of Heder Mitzvah. And I can prove it arithmetically, so to speak. Because the Gemara in Bava Kamma says, how much money do you have to spend? In other words, if I could buy something to be Yotzeh, it would be kosher, like an esrog. I could buy a kosher esrog for X amount of money, but I could buy a more beautiful esrog for more money. How much extra money must I spend in order to do a mitzvah beautifully? The Gemara gives you a number. The Gemara says, you're not obligated to spend more than a third of the total price on Heder Mitzvah. Now, that would mean the following. I'm going to date myself here. If you could get a kosher esrog for $40, again, you may remember that in your childhood, then I'm only obligated to spend no more than $60 on a mehudar, because the extra 20 would be one third of my total price. Now, with Neilus Chanukah, okay, good, candles don't cost a lot of money, granted, but if I could be Yotzei with a total of 8 candles, meaning for all of Chanukah, I'd use 8 candles, and instead I use 32 candles, I'm not even counting the Shamish, and right? So then, that is not one-third, that is 400%, right? I'm doing 400% because of Heder. And if I multiply it by the number of menorahs I'm lighting, it's much, much more than that. So clearly, we are not dealing with the normal rule of Heder Mitzvah. We're dealing with a special rule of Heder Mitzvah. And why is Chanukah so connected to the special Heder Mitzvah, which is different than the Heder Mitzvah of Kol HaTorah Kula? So here I'm going to give you two answers. The first answer is from the Chidushei Harim, the first Ger Rebbe, who says, in a way, the whole miracle of Chanukah, at least the Pach HaShemen, was an unnecessary miracle. Because what's the pshat? They have Tamei oil. They have plenty of Tamei oil. But they only found one jar of pure oil, and they lit, and lo and behold, that oil miraculously burnt for 8 days. What would have been if no miracle would have occurred? What would have been if they lit one day of pure oil, and by the next day it was extinguished? The halacha is you are allowed to use Tamei oil to light the menorah. Because although normally you don't bring Tumah into the Beis HaMikdash, but there is a rule that is called Tumah Hutra B'tzibur. That means for any communal offering, and the menorah is a communal offering, you are allowed to use Tamei oil. So why did Hashem make a miracle at all? It was a superfluous, unnecessary miracle, because they could have used Shemen Tamei the next day. Answer, the Chiddush Urim says, that even though you can be Yotze with Shemen Tamei, because Tumah Hutra B'tzibur, it is always a Heder Mitzvah to use pure oil. And Hashem, in His love for Am Yisrael, wanted to enable us and empower us to fulfill the mitzvah in the most beautiful manner possible. So the whole miracle of Chanukah was to enable us to do the mitzvah in a more beautiful way than was necessary. Therefore, we do the mitzvah in a more beautiful way than is necessary. And in a way, I mean, just for a sense, in a way, when Hashem gives us frosting on the cake, that shows more love. In other words, certainly, if Hashem gives us, you know, keeps us alive, etc., that's a more significant thing. But in a way, when Hashem just gives us when He gives us basic survival, He has to do that because that's the shavua that He made to the avos. Just like, you know, if you have a child and you give the child bread and water, that doesn't show as much love as if you give the child, you know, candy and cake. Even though the bread and the water might be healthier and it might be more, or whatever it would be. In a way, the basic necessities of life are simply the sense of obligation that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a bris with the avos. But to enable us to do a mitzvah beyond which was halachically necessary, that's the love of Hashem, and we reciprocate by doing the mitzvah beyond what is necessary. Did you want to say? Yeah.
Yes. I have a question. Is there any truth in the story that actually Chanukah came to celebrate Sukkot, which they couldn't carry out under Roman rule?
Yes.
And then when that was over, that's why we celebrate Hanukkah for 8 days.
Yes.
8 days.
Yes, yes. Well, I mentioned last week that in the book of the Maccabees, Maccabees 2, which is not, again, it's not a canonical, it's not a biblical book. The book of the Maccabees says specifically that the 8 days of Hanukkah were in commemoration of the lost 8 days of Sukkot. And ad kedei kach, that in the book of the Maccabees, it is recorded that people sat in a sukkah and took a lulav. Now, we will see that Chazal did not accept that idea. In other words, that seems to have been more connected to a folk. In other words, the many common people took that as a makeup, but that was not the way the Chachamim regarded it. But I will, you'll see as I go further, that there's one remez in Chazal to the Chanukah sukkah connection. And that's in Beis Shammah. Okay. Now, that's teretz number one. Why is there a Heder Mitzvah by Chanukah? Because the whole mitzvah was to enable, the whole nes rather, was to enable Heder Mitzvah. Now, answer number two is a bit more complicated, but that's also a very, very interesting answer. That is, the way the miracle is described, they find the jar of oil that is sealed with the seal of the Kohen Gadol, that it has not been opened, it had not been tampered with, it had not become Tomei by the non-Jews touching it. Now the question is, the Kohen Gadol was not in charge of the oil supply of the Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash needed oil. It needed oil for many, many purposes. But there was the office of the oil. This was called Lishkas HaShemanim. And there was an official who was in charge of that inventory. The Kohen Gadol didn't have that job. So why on earth would there have been a jar of oil that would be sealed with the seal of the Kohen Gadol? So listen to this. So the Sefer Kehelas Yitzchak posits that this oil was not menorah oil at all, but rather every single day, this is in the Torah, the Kohen Gadol had to bring a private meal offering, half of which was brought in the morning, and half of which was brought in the evening. It was flour mixed with oil, and this is called chavite Kohen Gadol. In fact, the modern Hebrew word for an omelet, chavita, actually comes because the chavitin was described as something that was fried and baked, etc. So Eliezer ben Yehuda, whoever, I don't know if it was him exactly, I have to check, but this is how words are commonly invented based on some biblical or Talmudical similarity. So it turns out that that was the Kohen Gadol's own korban. So this was not menorah oil at all. This was chavitim oil. Okay, that's fine. But here's the problem. The problem is the quality of oil that you need for a menorah is a higher quality than the quality of oil you need for a meal offering. For a menorah, you're only allowed to use the first few drops of clear oil that come out of a gentle squeezing of the olive, in which there is no sediment or no solid matter in the oil. After we squeeze out that clear oil, I then put the olives in an olive press, and the weight causes more oil to come out, but that oil is mixed with sediment and pieces of the fruit. So the halacha is that you need for the menorah clear oil, but for the chavitin, you can use sediment oil. So the question is, if the oil that they found was for the chavitin, how could it be kosher for the menorah? The menorah requires grade A, and the chavitim oil is grade B. Answer, it must be that this anonymous Kohen Gadol, who set aside oil for the chavitin, went beyond the halacha to do heder mitzvah, that although he could have used grade B, he decided to use grade A, and because of his heder mitzvah, a miracle happened. Meaning, had there not been his heder mitzvah, had we just found, what would have been had we found grade B oil? We couldn't have used it. We then would have used tamei oil, and nothing would have happened. No, I mean, there'd be no reason for Hashem to make a miracle for tamei oil to burn 8 days, because we have tamei oil for the next day. So it turns out, you hear the terrorists, the whole reason why there was the opportunity for a miracle is only because the Kohen Gadol used grade A when he could have used grade B. Therefore, the mitzvah was enabled because of heder mitzvah, and that is why we commemorate it by heder mitzvah. Yeah.
I just thought of a different reason that Yemi is starting, that we can find Yobon. Show that we can have the Hidur, the Yofi,
right,
in Olei Shem as well.
Yeah, I think that's a very good explanation, because Yefes does represent beauty, and Mahadr means you're using for the light of the Torah, the light of Kedusha, and that's a very good terrace. Thank you. So. We actually have three good answers, right? So I'm going to use that answer too. The Chidushi Arim says that the whole miracle happens to enable us to do a mitzvah beyond the halacha, Tumah Udra B'tzibur. The Kehilas Yitzchak says the miracle happened because the Kohen was mahadir in a mitzvah. And then we have the third idea, that Yefes does represent the power of beauty in the world, but it has to dwell in the tents of Shem, the tents of monotheism, the tents of Torah, the tents of Kedusha. It can't exist as a power in and of itself And therefore we have to incorporate that beauty within the framework of holiness and the like. But I want to go back on the first two answers though, because I want to point out, no, the third answer is a beautiful answer. It's very true, but in terms of what I wanted to draw a comparison is based on the first two answers. And that is that, you know, when you look at the lights of the menorah, there really is a double imagery in the lights of the menorah. On one level, the lights of the menorah represent the light of the Shekhinah that permeates the world. Right? We talk about light as the light of the Shekhinah, the light of Torah, the light of Kedusha, the light of purity, the light of goodness that dispels the darkness. So you're looking at the light of the Shekhinah. It's brought down in Svarim that the lights of the menorah, how many candles do we light, not counting the Shamish? We light 36 candles throughout Hanukkah, and that corresponds to the 36 hours of the first 3 days of creation, when there was not yet a sun until the fourth day, and it was the light of the Shekhinah that supplied the 12 hours of light each of those days, and that was called the Or HaGanuz, the hidden light that was taken away and concealed when the sun was created as a source of light. And we are told that the 36 candles of Hanukkah bring back into the world the 36 hours of the Or HaGanuz. That is why in Hasidus in particular, there is such a great importance in just sitting by the candles and staring at the candles, looking at the candles, gazing at the candles. Because although on some level we don't gaze at the Shekhinah Taka, but here the concept is one is trying to internalize that sense of God. See, that is how the Chiddush Yerim is looking at it. Because Chiddush Yerim is looking at the Nes of Hanukkah in terms of Hashem showing us His love by giving us gifts beyond what we need out of His love and care for us. But there's another remez in the menorah. And that is the menorah is also a remez to the neshama of a person. In other words, on one hand, when I look at the Neros, I think of the Shekhinah bringing goodness into the world. On the other level, when I look in the menorah, I see the radiance and goodness of the soul of a Jewish person. My soul, everyone's soul. Now, of course, ultimately it's all the same, because the goodness of our soul is because it comes from Hashem. But what do we say in Mishlei? Ner Hashem, Nishmas Adam. The soul of a person is a candle that is lit by Hashem. So the menorah is a mirror into ourselves, as well as a reflection of the light of the Shekhinah. That is why the Chiddush Yerim says that the word for soul, nefesh, nefesh is one of the words for soul, nefesh is a rashi teva, ner, which means a receptacle for oil, pesila, wick, and shin is shemen. What is a human being? We are a candle with a wick and with oil ready to be ignited by the light of Hashem. So what is our job in the world? Our job is to prepare the candle, make ourselves a candle so we can be lit by the light of the Shekhinah. This is even why, again, homiletically, the Gemara makes a statement that wicks that are not, certain types of wicks and oils are not kosher for Shabbos candles. Because since the flame is not strong, they flickers, you might come to adjust the flame, which is forbidden on Shabbos. So the lashon of the Gemara is, a wick or an oil that you cannot use for Shabbos, ein madlikin b'Shabbos, madlikin b'Chanukah, you're allowed to use for Chanukah. So the simple meaning of the Gemara is, because on Shabbos we're afraid the flame will flicker, Chanukah, if it flickers, you can just fix it. But the Chiddush Yerim says, al derech ha-chasidus, that it's going on a soul. Even a soul that is not yet ignited by the holiness of Shabbos. Ein madlikin b'Shabbos, madlikin b'Chanukah. Chanukah can inspire them. So that's really the second teretz, because the Keheles Yitzchak's teretz is that the Hidur mitzvah is not what Hashem did for us, but it's the Mesiras Nefesh and devotion of Am Yisrael looking for ways to serve Hashem in the most beautiful way possible. Mi ka'amcha Yisrael. In other words, one teretz is looking at the Neros as gratitude to God for giving us opportunities that He didn't have to give us. The other is acknowledging the greatness of Am Yisrael that seeks to serve Hashem beyond what is necessary in halacha. It's a celebration of the greatness of Am Yisrael. And both are true. You know, the Gemara says very beautifully that in the tefillin that men wear, so there are the parshios of Shema. Right? Hashem is one. So the Gemara in Brachos says, again, it's one of the most difficult Gemaras to understand, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu also wears tefillin. Hashem wears tefillin. So the Gemara asks, what's written in Hashem's tefillin? Mi ka'amcha Yisrael, meaning our tefillin talk about the greatness of the Almighty, and Hashem's tefillin talks about the greatness of Am Yisrael. If you're in a shul that still says Anam Zemiros, most of the yeshivas do not in Eretz Yisrael. So there's a remez. Peiro alai u peiri alav. Peiro alai. Hashem's glory is on me. That's a reference to the tefillin of the head, that they declare Hashem's glory. Peiri alav. My glory is on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He wears those tefillin. In fact, the Berditchever used to say, Levi Yitzchak of Berditchev used to say, he was always praying for Am Yisrael, always trying to see their good points and everything else. So he once said, you know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if Chas V'Shalom, I drop a pair of tefillin on the ground, I kiss it, I pick it up, you know, I fast, I'm so careful not to drop tefillin. But we are in your tefillin. And you drop us all the time, and we have colors and this and that, you know. He says, you have to pick up your tefillin. You have to kiss it and take care of it. He says, we do it for your tefillin. You should do it for your, we do it for our tefillin, which is yours. You should do it for your tefillin, which is about us. And you see those two nekudot in the two answers, at least, about the Ner Chanukah. Is it a celebration of God's kindness? Is it a celebration of the greatness of the Jew that is Moser Nefesh to serve Hashem? By the way, I mentioned that this is an anonymous Kohen Gadol who did this. Now you might be asking me, why do I say anonymous? Wasn't Matisyo the Kohen Gadol? So first of all, it's very, very ambiguous. The problem basically is, we have no reference in any historical literature that Matisyo was ever a Kohen Gadol. Moreover, in the Alanisim prayer, it is ambiguous. It says, "V'mei Matisyahu ben Yochanan Kohen Gadol." So, some Mefarshim say it was not Matisyahu that was a Kohen Gadol; it was Yochanan that was the Kohen Gadol. Now, here, this is very, very interesting because indeed we know a lot about some Kohen Gadol whose name was Yochanan. The Gemara tells us that Yochanan Kohen Gadol was a Kohen Gadol for 80 years, a tzaddik, and at the end of his life he became a tzaduki, which basically meant a Hellenist. Now, if that Yochanan Kohen Gadol, and we don't know because there could have been more than one, was Matisyahu's father, you get a tremendous psychological insight why Matisyahu was so inspired to be such a zealot. Because he saw within his own family the tragedy of Hellenistic culture. He saw how it took a righteous person and made him a tzaduki. But this is very, very speculative, because even if we assume that it was Yochanan that was the Kohen Gadol, the evidence seems to be that the Yochanan Kohen Gadol became a tzaduki was much later. In fact, it was descended from Matisyahu's great-great-grandson rather than Matisyahu's own father. And anyway, some Mefarshim even say that Kohen Gadol does not even mean the position of Kohen Gadol. It just means a great Kohen. Like Kohen Gadol, he was a great, great Kohen. It is not referring to the job of Kohen Gadol. Okay. And again, one could imagine reasons why Matisyahu could not be Kohen Gadol, because once again, we know in Roman times at least, no, this is not Roman times, in Roman times, the Romans controlled who would be appointed to be Kohen Gadol, and they often appointed people who were not righteous, and people who were more collaborationists. So one could imagine that Antiochus could have had very, very similar plans. So the tzaddikim would not necessarily have been the Kohanim Gadolim, but this anonymous Kohen Gadol apparently was a righteous person. Okay. But now let's go on to the next part of the Gemara. So we've answered why, in theory, we have these different levels of Heder Mitzvah. But now let's look at the Machlokas, Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Beis Shammai says, you go down. Beis Hillel says, you go up. Yeah, now, of course, as is always the case, we paskin like Beis Hillel. By the way, just as a little drush, let me tell you that there is a famous question, why is Hanukkah 8 days? Your answer about Sukkot is one answer, but there are 500 answers to this question at least. If they found enough oil for one day, the miracle is only 7 days. So Hanukkah should start on the second day and run for 7 days. Why on the first day? Many, 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 many answers. But one answer, it's a drush, I don't consider it too much of a serious answer, but it is an answer that some people say, is that if Hanukkah would be 7 days, on the fourth day, Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel would be lighting the same number of candles. Because it would be 7, 6, 5, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4. And since halachically it's very important to always show that you're following Beis Hillel and not Beis Shammai, you have to make Hanukkah 8 days, so there'll never be a night in which their numbers coincide. And some say there's even a remez to this in the word Chanukah. Chanukah could be read as a long abbreviation, Ches Neiros, we light candles for 8 days, V'halacha k'Beis Hillel, because the halacha has to be like Beis Hillel. That you go, okay, it's a drush, but it is brought down. But I want to focus on this general idea. What is the logic of either going up or going down? What is the basis of these different opinions? So the Gemara itself gives two different reasons. The first reason doesn't seem to be a reason. It seems just to describing what's going on, and that is, Beis Shammai says, you light based on the days that are coming down the pike that haven't happened yet, including the day that you're lighting. Meaning, on day one, I have 8 days of miracle coming down the pike. Day two, I only have 7 days of miracle coming down the pike. So Beis Shammai is looking at the days that are coming to you. And Beis Hillel is looking at the days you've already experienced. Again, counting the day that you're lighting. Now, that's not much of an explanation. That just seems to describe what they're saying. We'll come back to it. So I'll give you the second reason when I get to it, but let's just focus on what the first explanation might be. Beis Shammai looks at the days that are coming. Beis Hillel looks at the days that are leaving, that have left you. All of us know that throughout the Gemara, Mishnah, there are hundreds and hundreds of arguments between Beis Hillel and Shammai. By the way, very few arguments between Hillel and Shammai themselves. Hillel and Shammai were the founders of the great yeshivas. And most of the arguments are not between Hillel and Shammai, although they had some. They are between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai. That's not the same. But be it as it may, most of us know over the years that Beis Shammai tends to be strict and Beis Hillel tends to be lenient. Now the problem with that is when you get a case like Hanukkah, going from 8 to 1 is the same as going from 1 to 8, so there's nothing about strictness or not. How do you understand it? So Rav Shlomo Yosef Zevin, a great, great Gadol, explains it this way. He says that Hashem originally wanted to create the world with Midas HaDin, strict justice. A perfect world would be based on Din. But he saw that the world could not survive, so he had to moderate the Midas HaDin with the Midas HaRachamim. The ideal world is Midas HaDin. The compromised world is a shutfus, a partnership of Din and Rachamim. Rav Zevin says, instead of understanding it that Shammai is just strict and Hillel is easy, you look at it this way. Beis Shammai looks at the world in terms of its potentiality. He's an idealist. What should things have been? Beis Hillel looks at it in terms of realism. Meaning the reason Beis Shammai is machmir is because the Shairish. Now again, first of all, you have to understand this. This is very important. When we say Beis Shammai is machmir, Beis Hillel is meko, that does not mean that Beis Shammai got up every morning and said, okay, how can I be hard on people today? What new thing? Now there are, I'm not going to deny that there are people in the world that may do that. Particularly in Eretz Yisrael. Okay, maybe I shouldn't go that far. Okay. But, that was not Beis Shammai. Rather, you have to understand, every neshama has a different source in Shemayim. And the way each and every one of us perceives the emes is a divine reflection of the root of our soul. So it's not a question of sheker. Rather, this was the emes that he perceived. Beis Shammai perceived the midas hadin because that was the ideal world of God. Beis Hillel perceives the midas harachamim because that is the realization of that imperfection within this world. That is why the Arizal says, Liyasid lavo limosa mashiach, the halach is going to be like Beis Shammai. Because Beis Shammai is really the higher madrega. Beis Shammai is the world the way Hashem wanted to create it. Beis Hillel looks at the world as it actually is. So the way Rav Zevins uses it is, Beis Shammai looks at koach, potentiality. Beis Hillel looks at poel, the realization, how that potentiality gets imperfectly realized. So now Rav Zevin says, once you understand that kula and chumra are not simply easy versus strict, but it's connected to koach and poel, we now see Chanukah fits the pattern beautifully. Beis Shammai looks at the miracle of Chanukah in terms of the potentiality that God put. So, day one, although we didn't know there would be a miracle yet, day one, Hashem put 8 days of power in that oil. It wasn't realized yet, but the koach was 8. By day two, there was only 7 days. Beis Shammai looks at koach. Beis Hillel looks at poel. How is it realized in the world? He gives another example of another machlokas, which you can give the same explanation, which seems nothing to do with kula and chumra. We know that Kiddush on Friday night, we make 2 brachas. We make a bracha on wine, and we make a longer bracha, Mekadesh HaShabbos. Beis Hillel says, exactly as we do it, we first make Borei Pri HaGafen, then we make Mekadesh HaShabbos. But you know, Beis Shammai says to do it the other way. Beis Shammai says, first make Mekadesh HaShabbos, then make Borei Pri HaGafen. Now, once again, that has nothing to do with Kula and Chumrah. But Rav Zevin says like this. We know that Shabbos is a spiritual day. But we celebrate it by physical pleasures, like drinking, eating. So the question is, what is the relationship between the physical and the spiritual? Beis Shammai is an idealist, the way things should be. The way things should be is, I am so overjoyed by the spirituality of Shabbos that I want to celebrate physically. Meaning, the spiritual lift leads you to the physical pleasure. So in his sequence, Mekadesh HaShabbos leads to the Borei Pri HaGafen. Because I don't intrinsically want to drink or eat cholent, but my neshama is so uplifted that I want to celebrate in some way. I'm looking for something to celebrate. Beis Hillel says to Beis Shammai, maybe that's true for the tzaddikim, but for many people, it's not the Shabbos that leads to the wine, it's the wine that leads to the Shabbos, meaning what gets you to enjoy Shabbos is the wine, is the cholent, and therefore, the idea would be, from the Yayin you come to the... Beis Shammai says, from the Shabbos you come to the Yayin. Beis Hillel says, from the Yayin you come to the Shabbos. Again, the issue of the way the world should be, the way the world is. Yeah.
Is there any connection between this and the spheres of honor, which is also a question of why we count the first day to the 49th day?
I just want to get your question. Yeah, I understand, but you're connecting it to what?
To the counting of the lining of the candles from up to down, or down to up. What's the potential and what's the...
Okay. Well, there, of course. Okay, let me think about that. I mean, there you have a different... Yeah, okay. Well, we'll talk about it. By the time we get to Sphira, I'll try to address it. Yep. Okay. So it's a Koach versus Poach. Okay. So once again, that's the explanation, the first explanation. But then the Gemara gives another explanation. And here I'm going to say it relatively quickly, but it's very beautiful. Explanation number two. Beis Shammai says you go down because that is exactly the korbanos that were brought on Sukkos. On Sukkos, in the Beis HaMikdash, we brought 70 parim, 70 bulls. And they correspond to the nations of the world that try to destroy us. And they diminish in number. 13, 12, first day of Sukkot 13, second 12, until Hoshana Rabbah, 7. So Beis Shammai says, the same way the parim of Sukkot go down, the neiros of Hanukkah go down. But there's no explanation. What's the connection? Beis Hillel says, when it comes to holiness, we go up in holiness, we don't go down. Malin Bakodesh. Yep.
Can I ask you something about Beis Shammai?
Yeah.
I always hear things about him. Does he ever do anything right?
No. 1 second, I just told you. According to the Arizal, Beis Shammai is more right than Beis Hillel. When Mashiach comes, the halacha is going to be Beis Shammai. In other words, we don't follow Beis Shammai because we're not on the Madrega to live by the high standard that he has. But Beis Shammai is a very, very elevated standard.
And I felt like he was sort of disrespected by Hillel.
Well, the other thing, one thing is interesting. People think of Shammai, you know, we form certain stereotypes in our minds. Beis Shammai, actually it's not so much Beis Shammai, is a group of people. We think of Shammai as the founder, you know, mean, strict, you know. The famous statement in Pirkei Avos, Havi Makabel es kol adam besever panim yafos. Greet every single person you meet with a pleasant countenance, is said by none other than Mr. Shammai, Rabbi Shammai. That's right. He is the one that lived in his own life, Makabel kol adam besever panim yafos. So we should beware of the stereotypes that we sometimes form. Okay. Yeah. So here's the thing. So we're now at explanation number two of the Gemara, right? Explanation number two. Beis Shammai says Neiros Chanukah follow the Sukkos parim. No explanation. What's the connection? Beis Hillel says, this we can grasp, in holiness you go up, you don't go down. But what does Beis Shammai mean with the Sukkot? So, one possible explanation is, this goes back to your point earlier, this is the only possible reference in rabbinic literature to the vestigial idea that Hanukkah was created as an 8-day holiday to make up for the missed Sukkos, which is 7 days plus Shemini Atzeres. And although Chazal did not accept that idea, but it found its expression that the candles of Hanukkah would parallel the Karbanos of Sukkot. So perhaps this might be a reference to the second Maccabees. Again, this is a talk for another time. Chazal basically totally ignored the books of the Apocrypha. They were the book, they're quite different book. They just ignored it. There's only one book that sometimes gets a few mentions. That's the book of Ben Sira, which is a book of Proverbs. But the book of the Maccabees is totally ignored, and even though it's mainly history, and some of the other books are ignored because they contain heretical ideas as well. So there's a whole apocryphal literature, and Chazal just called them Sfarim Chitzonim, which is actually what apocrypha means, the outside books, and we have different statements. Anyone who reads Sfarim Chitzonim, Ein Lo Chelek Li Olam Haba, although we find that the Rishonim did not take that so literally. I mean, in fact, they said sometimes. Again, if somebody would say this today, they would be an Apikoros. But the Rishonim do say the idea that sometimes the statement, a person does not have a share in the world to come, is a very emphatic way of discouraging you from doing something, but it doesn't exactly mean that particular. I mean, after all, you can go to any Sfarim store, and you can get a copy of the Book of the Maccabees. It's called Sfarim Chitzonim. Avram Kahana, who was a professor at Hebrew University, translated them into Hebrew because originally some of them were in Greek. And you can get it in Me'ah Sharim, So obviously, people are not concerned. Ein lo chelek li'olam haba. And Rashi and other Rishonim bring the book Sefer Chashmonaim. But as I say, even though Chazal did ignore these books, sometimes they pop up like grass coming out through the concrete. And that is, this might be one remnant. But I want to give you a shot of the Sfas Emes that's very beautiful. Again, Sfas Emes wants to explain what is Beis Shammai's connection between the bowls of Sukkot and Hanukkah candles. So, what do the 70 nations represent? The 70 nations represent the external powers in the world that try to destroy us. And by bringing the Karbanos, we're diminishing their power until the coming of Mashiach. And even though it seems sometimes, what do you mean diminishing their power? Things get worse and worse and worse, but again, the Sfarim tell us this is like last flickering of a candle. Before a candle goes out, there's a certain power. Before a human being dies, there's sometimes a last bit of a burst of energy as the neshama leaves. So, in ways we don't understand, even the tragedies, even the power, the violence that one experiences are the death throes of these nations that try to destroy us. So, here's what the Sfas Emes says. Beis Shammai's comparison of Hanukkah and Sukkot is the following. Just like the bowls of Sukkot represent the diminution of the powers of evil that are external to us, the Hanukkah candles represent diminishing the power of evil that is within us. And therefore he views fire as a metaphor for burning, destroying, cleansing, purifying. So Beis Shammai says that just as Sukkot is focused on destroying the enemy without, the Neros of Hanukkah are burning away the evil that is within. Right? Burning. Sorei fumachaleh esara. Now, if your process is working, hopefully you'll have less and less ra to burn away as you go through. So the first day I got 8 things I got to work on. Burn it away. In other words, the spiritual trajectory of being so reif umachala esara is going to get less with the passage of time. But the Sfas Emes says, once again, Shammai is being the idealist and not the realist. Because while it's true that a tzaddik ought to be able to look at his flaws and simply work on them, for many, many people, this could be very counterproductive. If I spend too much time focusing on my failures, on my flaws, if I look at my neshama under an electron microscope and I see all the cracks and I see all the imperfections, and I see that every time I do a mitzvah, it's not perfect. Instead of that being a spur for improvement and growth, it often becomes an occasion for despondency, depression, and yish. Therefore, what Beis Hillel is doing is, he is shifting the image of fire away from that which destroys and burns to that which illuminates and gives warmth. Meaning, spiritual growth, according to Beis Hillel, takes place not by focusing on your flaws, but by generating light. Taking the good things that you do, taking the good parts of your personality, taking the mitzvahs that you gravitate to, and doing them better, doing them more. Because then, the choshech gets defeated automatically. Darkness cannot be defeated by directly cursing the darkness. Darkness is defeated by generating light. So in many ways, this question, Sfas Emetz was a Hasidic Rebbe, in many ways, he is creating the machlokas by Shammai and Beis Hillel is the machlokas between Musar and Hasidus. It's very fun. That Musar seems to be focusing a lot on what are my flaws. And the Emetz is that the Chazon Ish was in fact critical. The Chazon Ish, who was not a Hasid, was in fact critical of Musar, although he greatly admired the Gedolim and the Tzaddikim. Of course he admired them, and he was machzir them. But he said that for many people, he felt the approach of Musar made people overly compulsive, overly nervous, tense, and negative about themselves, unable to serve Hashem b'simcha. This is what the Chazon Ish writes. This is actually a censored part of his Sefer Emunah u'Bitachon. It was taken out, but in some of the newer editions, it was put back in, and we know anyway, mipi Hashmua, that the Chazon Ish expressed these reservations. And of course, even with Musar, again, I'm really, really simplifying because we're at the end of the class. If you take, for example, the Musar of the Altar of Slobodka, it was a very different type of Musar. The Musar of the Altar of Slobodka precisely stressed what we call the godless Adam, the greatness of a person, as opposed to the pechisus. Right, so there were different schools. Within Musar itself, there were different schools. Some said you have to focus on your chesronos and work in them. But again, this ties into the first explanation when we talked about the koach and the poel, because ideally, I should be strong enough to look into myself and say, these are my problems and I'll work on it. Realistically, it often becomes self-defeating. So you kind of work on your strengths, and then mimela the choshech gets weaker. And this is the machlokes. Beis Shammai says, we compare the Neros Chanukah to the Parei Achad. The Parei Achad diminishes the power of external evil. The Neros Chanukah represents the burning away of internal evil. And therefore the imagery of Eish is Seirei Fumachala, burns and destroys. Beis Hillel says, we look at the Eish as Riboy Ha'or, increasing the light. And so Bezer Hashem, I hope that all of us should be zocha to have a true Riboy Ha'or. May it be a real Hanukkah Habayis, and the Bayis is none other than our own soul, which should be a Mishkan for HaKadosh Baruch Hu.